Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Social Contract, a Commander podcast. I'm Mike Allman, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Alex Lapp. Alex! There's been a murder most foul.
A murder most foul, Mike, indeed. We are doing a set review for the murders at Karlov Manor.
Yeah. Who would have thought, with all of these, you know, vampires and such, that there'd be death. Like, whoa.
Well, there's not just murders. There's also scheming. And with scheming comes politics. And Mike, okay. This is another just super rich set full of political and social flavor.
Color
we're
going to
split this into two different episodes. This episode, we're going to focus on the monocolor cards in the 99.
Right.
And then in the next episode, we're going to go ahead and do the commanders as well as the multicolored and colorless cards. Just to set expectations.
So we have a lot to talk about, and we should probably immediately get started into it. However, I want to do what I normally do whenever we've got a lot of stuff to do, and I want to completely digress for a second. So in this set about a murder and, like, detectives and clues and stuff like that, I think if we were to be a Sherlock and Watson, you're probably the Sherlock, right? Like, you know the rules, and you're much more observant on stuff than I am. And my job is basically like, hey, Alex, I don't understand. Make it better. Right?
Might be a little overly self-denigrated here, Mike. I think you're a clever guy.
Oh, yeah. No, I think I'm a clever guy, too. Like, I served as a doctor in the war in this scenario. You know? Like, I'm very capable. But you just have an eye for detail that I don't understand, because sometimes magic rules are very complicated and I don't know how interactions work.
Well, they are, and we're going to get right into it, Mike. There are many new mechanics in this set, and we come across them, we'll cover them, and I think we're about to hit our first one right here. Let's start with mono white.
Okay, a lot of white in this set, which it makes sense, you know, politics, group hug, etc., that it stacks. Hitting those speeds. Aurelia's Vindicator, by the way, also very excited about this set. I think I know all the words that I'm going to read. Two white for a 4/2 angel flying lifelink, ward 2, and disguise X3 white. Now, Alex, what is disguise? Help me out with this.
Yeah, Mike. So disguise is one of the many new mechanics that we have in this set. And a lot of players are going to compare disguise to morph. Because it is somewhat similar to Morph in how it functions. When you have a card with Disguise, it will have a cost associated with it. And that means that you can cast that card face down for 3 generic mana as a 2/2 with no characteristics, just like Morph, except with the little extra that face down permanent with no characteristics also has Ward 2. Which means to target it with a spell or ability, that controller of that spell or ability will need to pay an additional 2 mana, or it will be countered on the spot.
Okay.
Now,
All
of the other rules about face down and how those characteristics work and how you turn a face down card face up, that's all going to be the same. Instead of with Morph, where you're going to turn it up for its Morph cost, you're going to turn this face up for its Disguise cost, which we have listed. And this even has a further wrinkle in it, Mike, because this Disguise cost has an X cost in it.
Yeah.
And we're not actually done reading this card yet.
No. You turn it up for its Disguise cost, and you pay X into it along with the other 3 and a white. When Aurelia's Vindicator is turned face up, exile up to X other target creatures from the battlefield and or creature cards from graveyards. When Aurelia's Vindicator leaves the battlefield, return the exile cards to their owner's hands. So this is an O-ring with ward that targets extra stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here, Mike.
Whew.
We've got, for 2 double white, it's a 4/2 with flying lifelink ward 2, and then also can be disguised. So whether you cast it face up or face down, it has ward 2 regardless, which makes it much more expensive to remove. And we're going to see that pretty consistently throughout the set. We'll see a lot of Ward 2. But if we wanted to, if we wanted to get these additional effects, we would have to cast her disguised, right? Because if we don't cast her disguised, we're only going to get Flying Lifelink Ward 2 and none of the other fun stuff down here. So let's say we cast her for a disguise cost. We're going to pay three and a white and then any additional amount of generic. And we're going to cast it face down for three mana. Okay. Right?
Okay.
Three mana goes face down. It has Ward 2. It has no characteristics. Then anytime we want to, we can pay, just like I said, three and a white and any amount of generic. We'll turn it face up. And the amount of extra generic we spend, that's how many O-rings we get. So that can be pretty nifty there.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't feel great, you know, paying one into X for this. But the second that you pay two, all right, great. I'm going to pay six mana, exile two things with a thing that has ward. It's not a great return, but it's not a bad one.
The interesting thing is usually O-ring effects are hitting the battlefield only. This is also hitting creature cards and graveyards.
Exactly. And so because this is not Morph, but because this is the same kind of timing restriction and everything, Morph is its own special interaction, right?
That's right, Mike. Turning a face-down card face-up through Morph or Disguise, whatever method that you use to do that, that is a special action, and that happens as fast as an action can happen. You have to have priority, but if somebody goes to target something in their graveyard to reanimate it, yes, in response, you can use your Disguise Revealed here, pay X3 and white, and you can nix it right out of the graveyard. Their spell fizzles.
Or, you know, hey, I'm waiting for something really big to happen. Oh, no, somebody's casting Eldrazi Conscription on their commander. I'm going to exile it. So, like, it's cool as far as the, like, crazy timing on that. And I feel the restrictive cost makes sense for, like, how busted that could be otherwise. I like this card. It's a busy card. It's doing a lot.
It is. I mean, it's a mythic. It's a very busy card. But
right.
this kind of thing where it's basically like a trap card, right? We have it face down. There's no information about it. And it's expensive to remove. But when we need to, we're not going to use it as, you know, as a body, although we certainly could. It's a 4-2 Flying Lifelink Ward too. But we can use that instant speed just as a mana sink and say, hey, I'm going to hit that, and that. And just at the beginning of the player before me's end step, and boom, I got three O-rings, four O-rings.
So last question on this card, because we spent a decent amount of time on it, but we've also talked about two different mechanics. We're like, man, we got a lot of cards to talk about.
We sure do.
Let's spend the first 6 minutes on one card.
Yeah.
But so when I play a disguise card out of my hand, do I, like, when I play a morph card out of my hand, I say I play a morph down, like face down. Do I say I play a disguise card? Do I say I play a cloaked card?
You'll say
card?
That you're casting this card face down. If you are indeed casting a card. Now, there's another mechanic we'll talk about in a bit here that's very, very closely linked to disguise. And that's cloak. Okay. We'll talk about that. But
I don't have to specify whether it's a morph or disguise creature or anything like that.
This is important, and as we see more face-down things, this is going to become a lot more relevant. Things that are face-down have an element of trust intrinsic to them, Mike, right? Almost like a tutor that you don't reveal, like a black tutor. You're doing something that you may indeed have the right to do, but, I mean, how could anybody know if you're putting a card face down the battlefield that it has that ability or not? So for that reason, there's a few sort of stopgaps that we have. And the first one is that whenever we create or cast or put face down permanents into a zone, we don't have to tell people what they are, but what we do have to do is keep them delineated.
Okay.
So we can't play three card Monty with our face down creatures. We can't We can't shuffle them into a pile and deal them back out and then check what we dealt. No. So whenever anybody asks, or even without them asking, we need to have them laid out. This is a card that I played face down two turns ago. This is a set of creatures that Ixodron flipped upside down last turn. We have to be able to tell them apart and identify them in that way as requested, but we don't have to tell people what they are.
Well, yes, but as far as like a morph is, you know, a morph. It's a three colorless mana for a 2/2. And then you got the disguise cards that are three colorless mana for 2/2 with ward 2.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, here's differentiation. So like you're kind of it's weird. Like I'm doing the, you know, okay, I play this trap card face down kind of meme. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, but some of these are, you know, they're ward, some of them aren't ward, some of them it's kind of cool. I'm interested to see like how that playstyle goes and if that direction's like, you know, it's different from like the foretell cards.
Right. Having ward 2 is not a secret, right? Ward 2 is an ability that face down creature has.
And it has to be known. And
you may have either a reminder token or something that indicates this creature that has no name, no abilities, and no type has ward 2.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Well, that is about 2 minutes on Aurelia's Vindicator and a lot of minutes on what the heck is Aurelia's Vindicator. Why don't you tell me about our next card here?
Yeah, this one's cool. We got Doorkeeper Thrall for 1 and a white. Okay. That's a 1/2 creature Thrall with flash and flying. It says artifacts and creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. Mike, this is a hate bear, and this is comparing directly to Hushwing Griff.
Ew.
And Hushbringer. Right. We have these 2-mana creatures that come out easy and fast, and they have a specific kind of hate on them. Maybe not necessarily a silver bullet, because this is hitting a lot of different kinds of things here. Artifacts and creatures entering don't cause abilities to trigger. But with Hushbringer, or Hushgriff, I forget exactly what's a Hushbringer, it costs more, and it doesn't hit artifacts. So this is, in many ways, one of, I think this is the best hate bear. I mean, this is comparing directly to Hushwing and Torpor Orb, and this, I think, is pretty much the best out of any of them, if you're willing to accept this being a creature.
Yeah, easily killable, or easier to kill because creature, but it has flash, yes. It has some evasion with flying, like, Alex, I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hate bear. It's got power in it, and it's aggressively good. Costed.
It's good. It's real solid. I do like the symmetrical effect of it. It's not your opponent's. It's no one, nothing. Sorry. Good day, sir.
Yes.
So I can tolerate it a little bit better, but it will. It also just has a little bit of a creepy face, but that's just me. I guess that's a mask. Either way. Moving on to Immortal Obligation. 1 and a white for an instant. Return target creature card from an opponent's graveyard to the battlefield under their control with a duty counter on it. We said duty. For as long as that creature has a duty counter on it, it is goaded, can't attack you or permanent you control, and can't block creatures you control. Alex, this is the coolest card in a long time.
This is...
Wow! That's awesome! I love this so much!
A direct reanimation straight from the graveyard to the battlefield. We're only spending 2. It's at instant speed. And we're not just doing it on somebody's word. We are getting protections. We're getting contract. For as long as it has a duty counter, I mean, that means that... goodness. I mean, there's the only thing that can change that is if the counter gets removed.
It's attacking. It's not messing with you. Yeah.
And these are abilities that basically the counter has. You can think of it in that way. The counter says as long as this is on, it's goaded, which means it has to attack, and it has to attack a player other than you if able. It can't attack you or a permanent you control. Wow. Okay. So this is... just better than goaded, right? Goaded has that sort of get outed.
Goaded is good until it's one on one.
When you're 1-on-1, the goaded creature has to attack, which means it has to attack you. However, this has the additional clause that it can't attack you or a permanent you control, which includes planeswalkers and battles. Hopefully, we'll see some more of those in the future. And also can't block creatures you control. So we've got a duty counter is the perfect name for it, Mike, because this is. It's basically your creature that you're loaning to them.
Mm-hmm. No, this is a super cool card. I can't believe this is 2 mana. Like, you're reanimating somebody else's thing. This is a group hug discount
right here. This is a creature from an opponent's graveyard to an opponent's battlefield.
But you're, like, okay, you know what I'm not going to reanimate? The thing that taps and does terrible things to me. So, it just, as long as you're not reanimating a value engine... or something that has a tap ability to target you that isn't damaged. This wants damaged, you to reanimate right? a beater. Like, yeah, well, it's good. Me reanimating somebody else's thing, and then they get to do a lot of terrible stuff to everybody, and then they have a useless beater on their team when it comes down to the end game if I'm there. That's I don't understand any kind of downside
to this card. The downside is that you're giving an opponent a benefit. Now, to us, that's an upside, of course.
To aid us? Yeah, that aids us. All right, fine. This feels like it's skirting the line a little bit too much between, like, just good and, like, a group hug. Like, aha, they don't understand the value could. But, okay, that's fine. You and I can just take advantage absolutely. As we possibly can. Moving on to our next one. Karlov Watchdog, 3 and a white for a 3-2 dog. Good boy. With Vigilance. Permits your opponent's control can't be turned face up during your turn. Okay. Whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn. Okay. Neat.
Yeah, this is I picked this. This is a silver bullet specifically for Morph Disguise Cloak, things that turn face up. In this set's environment, that's obviously going to apply quite frequently, and it's appropriate for it to be there.
Yeah, draft set, stuff like that, this is going to be huge.
In the wider game of Commander, come 6 months from now when this set is a semi-recent memory, most decks are not going to want this, but, I mean, if you're running a deck like mine, a Silver Bullet deck, and people like running, or maybe you have somebody in your meta who's playing a Morph deck or a Disguise deck, this is really going to hose them, Mike.
Well, that combined with, like, even if you're like, okay, what else? Like, it's a 3-2 dog that when you're attacking with 3 or more creatures, you're pumping your team. Like, think of, like, the Rin and Ciri deck. Like, okay, great. We're making lots of cats. We're making lots of dogs. Now we're attacking.
Yeah, this is good
them.
Support for dogs.
Bigger. It's, yeah, good. Dogs need to have best friends, too. So let's give them more. What do you got for our next card here? Because this looks
weird. No witnesses,
weird.
Mike. We got 2 generic and 2 white. That's 4 mana for a sorcery. Each player who controls the most creatures investigates. Then destroy all creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Investigation, we all know what that means. You're going to make a clue token.
Yep.
So basically this is just your very, very standard Wrath effect with a tiny bit of upside. And the interesting thing about that is that maybe somebody else has the most creatures and they can investigate. It just gives the person who was ahead the most a little consolation prize. And I think that we really appreciate cards that are otherwise normal functional pieces that also give a consolation prize.
I mean, it's a 4 mana board wipe because, like, you know, it's oh, we're not going to Wrath of God because that's, like, real good and we're not going to do that. Okay, cool. It's a 4 mana board wipe because of the downside of potentially giving somebody clue tokens. Like,
well, they only get one. They don't get one for each creature they controlled. They only,
No, I'm just saying multiple other people that might not necessarily be the caster. So it's
that'd
like,
be interesting
if
everybody
downside
had the
potentially.
Exact same amount of creatures. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody make a clue. Also, everything get out of here. No, that's fair. I like this one. That's a decent little sorcery speed wipe. Pretty cool. Alex, I'm going to digress again. Have you ever heard of the show Yu Yu Hakusho?
Yes, I've certainly heard of it. It's like a spirit detective kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Very specifically, a human being dies. It goes in the afterlife, becomes a spirit, and then gets his soul to be like basically retains himself, becomes a spirit detective, and fights on a lot of fights and has like a special move. Like his Dragon Ball Z Kamehameha is something called the spirit gun. Where he makes a finger gun and shoots things. Anyway, I'd like to talk to you about Otherworldly Escort. This is 3 and a white for a 4/3 creature human detective with flash. When Otherworldly Escort dies, if it's not a spirit, return it back to the battlefield under its owner's control with 4 charge counters on it. It's a spirit detective with the italics. It's no longer a human. And then you can pay 1 and a white. Tap it and remove a charge counter from Otherworldly Escort to destroy target creature that dealt you damage this turn.
Yeah, this is a cool one.
This is really cool. They made Yu Yu Hakusho, and more importantly, it's a good card.
This is. You have
a rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake that says you attack enemy, just gonna pick one of those and blow it up. I can do that 4 times.
Yep.
And in addition to that, I mean, I have an Afterlife deck. Now, white is not in those colors, unfortunately, but I mean, there's plenty of decks that would be happy to have a reward for a creature dying.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think this is such a clever design. Because, okay, it's 4 mana, but it's flash CP'd. I'm going to put out a 4-3 for something that's attacking me. I'm going to block with it. My 4-3 is going to die. It's immediately going to come back with those charge counters, and now it's online again. So this is, A, potentially stopping one big hit from coming through. And B, it's not a rattlesnake as much, because it is a, hey, when you succeed in doing the thing that I don't want you to do, I feel like then I'm going to punish you for it. Right, I guess. It's
it says if you... It's discouraging it, right? And it could discourage it so much that you never have to spend any charge counters, because I'll just lose my creature.
For it to work, they have to succeed in the thing that you would be trying to persuade against. But either way, you're absolutely right. It's like it's a different kind of rattlesnake that's still very effective, and I very much like it. It's a very cool card. Let's go to our next card, because I read ahead on it a little bit, and I'm not gonna lie, I love this card already. I've written down my favorite card of the set 3 times already, and we're on card 7.
Nice. Redemption.
What do you got for me for this?
2 and a white, 3 mana.
Yeah.
For enchantment aura with enchant creature. Enchanted creature has indestructible and is goaded. And it has pay 1 and a white, exile enchanted creature.
Hey, remember that time that goaded is really good until you get into the 1-on-1 end game? Well, this is a good way to get around it.
So cool, because it gives you... I think ideally you would want to go ahead and put this on an opponent's creature, because without flash, indestructible is not really going to help a super amount here. And exile won't help either. But if you're hitting an opponent's creature with this, it becomes goaded. It has to attack. It's indestructible, so it can't be destroyed through damage or destroy effects. And if they try anything funny, you're going to tug the leash and they are exiled.
Yeah. I mean, think of the big one that comes to mind for me is the Ariette of the Charmed Apple. Commander, where it's like, aha, I'm going to put auras on other people's creatures, and then good stuff happens. Wazah. But, like, this just by itself, that's a pretty good way of making sure that something isn't specifically going to come at you at any point. That's a very cool idea. Is this a common?
This is a rare. Yeah, unfortunately, the set symbols that they've been doing lately, they're getting fancier with them, and the result of that is that at the extremely tiny size that since symbols are printed at, they all look like the same color, which is black.
Well, I'm fairly colorblind, so they all look pretty similar to me no matter
even
what.
Even to people with full color vision, this still is almost indistinguishable from uncommon.
Ha ha, you all get to live in my shoes for a little bit. Isn't it terrible?
It's awful.
That's a very cool card, though. I like that a lot.
Definitely.
Our next one here is expensive already. Trouble in Pairs. 2 white-white for an enchantment. If an opponent would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. Love that. Whenever an opponent attacks you with 2 or more creatures, draws their second card each turn, or casts their second spell each turn, you draw a card. Wow!
Holy moly. Yeah, we got the Stranglehold slash... what do you call that? Monologue tax.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got a lot of great
whenever
stuff
a player casts magic, whenever a player plays magic at a high level, draw a card.
Attacks you with 2 or more creatures, or draws their second card, or casts their second spell. At least 2 of those things are going to be happening very regularly.
Yeah.
Some decks may be attacking with 2 creatures more regularly, but certainly people will be drawing cards and casting spells. And with the kind of decks that we play, we will be encouraging both of those things to happen, making this card even more reliable.
In a standard pod, like take the group hug out of it. In a standard pod, if you play this on curve on turn 4, you're probably drawing like 2-3 cards rotation pretty easy.
Yeah, and then what's the alternative? They slow down their game.
Right.
That's really bad for them. They don't want that. They remove this. Sure. Go for it. I mean, if a card's good enough to remove, it's good enough to run, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, heck. I remember when Phyrexian Arena was like one of the most powerful cards in the game that I saw consistently. It's just like, aha, I'm going to pay a life and draw an extra card. Now for 1 more mana. Hey, are you doing stuff? Cool, I'll draw a card. Oh, really? I'll draw a card.
Yeah, Mike's right. This is pre-ordering for in excess of $20.
Yeah. It's
and that's people are no fools. They recognize how consistent this card is in the game of Commander.
Yeah, value is exactly that. Value. We like it. What do you got from our next one here?
Got Unexplained Absence. Okay. 3 and a white. That's 4 mana for an instant. For each player, exile up to 1 target non-land permanent that player controls. For each permanent exiled this way, its controller cloaks the top card of their library. So we got here. Cloak and Disguise are very closely related. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're also closely related to Morph. So cloaking is like a cross between Manifest and Disguise.
Okay.
Rather than Disguise is more like Morph. So there, as the reminder text, it says to cloak a card, you'll put it onto the battlefield face down as a 2-2 creature, no characteristics with War 2, and then you can turn it face up for its mana cost at any time. You have priority as a special action. Again, very, very similar to Disguise. You get that War 2, you get it face down. Instead of having a Disguise cost, it is always going to be its mana cost. And unlike Disguise, where you that's an alternate casting, like Morph is, this is closer to Manifest, where it can come in from your library.
I think I have a new rule for Wizards, because they clearly listen to me, where anytime you introduce a new mechanic, you have to have all of the subtext, or you know, the italics, the rules text for that mechanic on the card. And if you can't fit it because the card has too many words, then it can't be in that set. Because,
they did put it on this card.
Which they did, and I appreciate it. And I'm just looking around, and I'm like, man, Aurelia's Vindicator does a lot of stuff. What's Disguise?
What's Disguise?
Again, okay, cool. And then I look at our next one, which we'll get to, and I'm like, oh, okay, I appreciate it. You put it down there, too, again. And then we get into blue, and we'll talk about it, but grr. This is cool. 4 mana, we're going to exile some stuff, and then Manifest,
we're gonna grasp
but
fate,
not Manifest. Right? Yeah, that's pretty
but
nice.
But instead of the usual Grasp of Fate, where it's an O-ring style, and it comes back if they blow up the enchantment,
this is an instant. Get them out of
so
here.
They're exiled permanently,
yeah.
And as their consolation prize, they will get their, effectively, the new form of Manifest off the top of their library face down. If it's not a creature card, that's just a 2-2 with War 2.
It's just a 2-2 with War 2.
Forever. Yep. So you're kind of get screwed there, bud.
I'm all for the ones.
This is hitting non-land permanents. This is great.
Yeah, I'm all for the cards that say exile, for each player, exile up to. I'm always a fan of that, because I don't want to pick on somebody that doesn't need to be picked on. I don't necessarily want to get rid of my stuff if I can help it. I like my stuff. I put it in the deck for a reason, for the most part. So yeah, cool card. Next one, Unyielding Gatekeeper, 1 and a white for a 3-2 elephant cleric with disguise, 1 and a white. So again, you can cast it for 3 as a 2-2 with War 2. You can pay 1 and a white to flip it back up. With that said, when Unyielding Gatekeeper is turned face up, exile another target, non-land permanent. If you controlled it, return it to the battlefield tapped. Otherwise, its controller creates a 2-2 white and blue detective creature token.
This is so cool.
All right, that's a lot of stuff. Okay. Flip this back. You flip this up for 2. If you controlled it, you return the thing back to the battlefield tap.
If you want any of this cool stuff to happen, you must cast this disguised. If you don't cast a disguised, you're getting a 3-2 for 2.
Yep. Okay. Pay 3 for a 2-2. It has Ward 2. For 1 and a white, you can flip it up, and then you exile something else, a target non-land permanent. If it was yours, you return it back to the battlefield tap. Yeah. So basically, you blink a thing. Yeah, okay. And if you do it to somebody else, they make a 2-2 white-blue
detective. But theirs doesn't come back. So for them, you just hit them with the Beast Within, the generous gift. But if it's for you, that's just an Ephemerate. You just flickered it. So this is a modular card.
Oh, it's good. And more importantly, it's not, you know, we're talking Beast Within, and, you know, those are the go-tos, right?
Yeah,
this is exile.
Yep.
So, like, oofa doofa.
Although you are paying...
You're paying a total of 5.
4 and a white for
to be able to do that. Yeah. But...
So I think if you're paying 4 and a white, it's nice to have these two options. It is more expensive than either of the options separately, right? Flickering your own creature, sure. That's usually one mana instead of five. Yeah. And hitting somebody else's permanent, making them a replacement, that's usually not five.
All that said, this is a cool card.
It gives you options. Like, it's really cool.
And not expensive either. Big fan of that. As far as like actual like pocket price right now. So that's pretty cool. We like elephants. What do you have for me the next one?
Got a Wojcik Investigator. Not sure about that name.
Okay.
Got two and a white, three mana for a creature angel detective. It's a 2/4 flyer with vigilance. At the beginning of your upkeep, investigate once for each opponent who has more cards in hand than you. Yeah, so we've seen effects like this in the past that reward you when other players have something more than you. And a lot of these effects are in white, because white is traditionally the color of balance. So we're seeing you'll get this upkeep trigger. For each player who has a bigger hand than yours, you're going to get a clue token, which means pay two mana, you can get a draw off that. You can use it as an artifact. I think this definitely has potential, especially when you're able to assure that that kind of thing is going to happen, or at least encourage it by running the group draw effects and the political draw effects that we like to run. That makes cards like this considerably better, because it's a lot less of a dice roll as to whether you're going to get good benefit out of that. If you play your cards right, you can have this trigger hitting you three investigates every single turn, Mike.
Sure. And like... I like to base these cards based off of, okay, let's say I'm in a position where I can't get the normal benefit, you know, because I'm just playing with people that don't have cards in hand or whatever. A three mana 2/4 flying vigilance in a creature type that you can absolutely synergize around. Like, there's plenty of angel decks. There's plenty of decks that care about angels. The worst case scenario, that's pretty solid all on its own. Having an attacker and a 4 toughness blocker with evasion and that ability. I like that a lot. That's a clever design.
If this is an upkeep trigger, you could use effects like Paradox Haze to double this up.
Sure. Or even just if you're doing something where, we're going to have lots of people draw. I mean, the fact that it's on upkeep, too, means any of the extra draw effects that you've got going on aren't necessarily affecting you before this would trigger. So that's pretty cool, too. I like it.
That concludes mono
white. That's it for white. Yeah, lots of cool cards here. And then we're going to go into blue, and I'm going to be upset because we're going to have disguise.
This power level is about to go way up, Mike.
Yeah, it's again, anytime I see a lot of words, but I don't see descriptions on the abilities of words, I'm always scared.
Mike, you ever read the Maltese Falcon?
I have not.
It's a classic mystery book and a classic film. And if I'm not mistaken, that is what this card's all about.
Well, this card is coveted. Coveted Falcon, one blue for a 1/4 artifact creature bird. I didn't even read the artifact part. Holy cow, this card is busy. A 1/4 artifact creature bird with flying. Whenever Coveted Falcon attacks, gain control of target permanent you own but don't control. Oh my goodness. It has disguise, one and a blue. Mm-hmm. Whenever Coveted Falcon is turned face up, target opponent gains control of any number of target permanents you control. Draw a card for each one they gain control of this way.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so...
That is a cheap donation effect, Mike. Usually when you donate things, you are paying per permanent. This is mass donation.
So again, we have to go through this until the math makes out. It makes the sense for me every time.
Sure.
Pay three, play this out as a 2/2 with ward 2.
Yes.
Flip it over for one and a blue. Yes. When you do that, you can give an opponent any number of permanents you control, and you draw a card for each one you give. Then whenever you attack with this thing, you gain control of a permanent that you own but don't control, such as all of the things that you literally gave away to draw all those cards.
Anything that you gave away, anything that anyone else has stolen. For example, some kind of perplexing chimera.
Good Lord.
Moving on.
Holy cow.
That's one coveted bird.
That is Strunk.
It's an artifact creature. It's not expensive.
It's the fact that it's an artifact creature means, okay, great. If I find something that cares about artifacts, this is going in there. It's not expensive.
This is a bombshell for Zedru. This is probably the best card that we've seen in 5 years.
I literally did the, like, I don't want to put Zedru together again. But, like, but if I get this card, I might have to. Because I don't know what I'd put. I don't know what I'd put Zedru's this in.
Paying a miserable 3 mana for each donation. Meanwhile, for this, just turning it face up, you can turn Zedru into a give you a ton of cards and gain you a bunch of life fast.
Both. Because you can turn it face end step. The player before me, I'm going to turn this bird face up. I'm going to give you a bunch of stuff. I'm going to draw a full grip of cards. Then I'm going to go to upkeep. Oh, look, Zedru triggers. I'm going to draw extra cards, gain extra life. And then I'm going to attack, and I'm going to get one of those back. It's not even when it attacks target opponent. It's not when it deals damage.
Yep.
It's just when it attacks, take something back.
And because it's a flyer with a big butt, it has a decent chance of remaining alive after that attack to go in again and get another permanent.
I don't want to talk about this bird anymore.
I told you the power level's going to jump up, Mike. Final word Phantom up next. That's 2 and a blue, right? 3 mana for a creature spirit detective. It's a 1/4 with flash and flying. I mean, White's in shambles right now. During each opponent's end step, you may cast spells as though they had flash. Mike, I have a feeling this is right up your alley.
I have thoughts. I need to record them.
Oh, goodness. You flash this in on an opponent's end step, and all of a sudden, you flash in whatever you want. You got, Leyline of
Anticipation for a specific timing on... here's the thing. Yeah. 3 mana for this, I'm okay with it. I think this is just a cool card. I'm not freaking out over it or anything like that, because it's a timing restriction on something that could get blowed up. But that said, 1/4 flying, all these spirits, all this flying, all these birds.
Most effects that let you start flashing things in like that don't themselves have flash.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it's cool to be able to, I'm going to flash this in, and this enables me to flash in everything else that I would do. It's gonna make for a really cool, like, haha, kind of turn.
You have the last word.
Very clever.
A lot of people I saw, they went to Jackie Chan Adventures from Kids WB in 2000.
One more. This is Columbo.
This is Columbo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just one more thing. I do like that. Very cool. Final word, Phantom. Next one here. Oh, boy. We have a 5-mana instant, which means it's going to do some stuff. Intrude on the Mind. 3 blue-blue for an instant. Reveal the top 5 cards of your library and separate them into 2 piles. We love piles here. And an opponent chooses one of those piles. Put that pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard. Create a 0/0 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. Then put a +1/+1 counter on it for each card put into the graveyard this way. Okay, so,
Well, this is certainly not the first Piles card we've seen.
No.
This is the first one that has ever rewarded
turned into something.
Right. This is actually paying you out for the pile that you don't get.
Right.
So I feel like, and this is just my initial off-the-cuff reading, that what you would probably want to do is put your most desired card in a pile by itself, or maybe with one other card, and then stack the other cards in the other pile so that either you're going to get a large number of cards, which you can benefit even if they're not the right cards you need right then.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody doesn't want to give you all those cards and they, erroneously give you the beater that you wanted or whatever value that you wanted, now that bigger pile is generating you a sizable token. And as long as that pile had any number of cards in it, Mike, you're getting a token either way.
Right. And it's... I mean, heck, if you've got something that's just some kind of anthem effect for your creatures, okay, great. Then it doesn't matter. I'm still getting something, and it's going to stick around. This is cool. I like these kind of effects where it's, Hey, it, like the.
I like when they add something new. Yeah. And they innovate, right? Because we've seen a lot that are just the same.
Well, I was thinking of like the a couple sets ago when it was the fractals. Whenever you did something, you know, oh, we're going to get rid of all creatures, but then everybody's going to get a creature back, and it's going to be as big as your creatures overall. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the idea of doing that with a pile card is pretty neat. That said, I want to move on to our last card, blue, here, because I think it's fun. I love this, and man, shenanigans. Oh, here we go. Lost in the Maze. X blue blue for an enchantment with flash. When Lost in the Maze enters the battlefield, tap X target creatures, put a stun counter on each of those creatures you don't control. As a reminder, if a permanent with a stun counter would become untapped, remove one from it instead. That said, tapped creatures you control have hexproof. Mm. Ooh, baby! I love engines. I love synergy. I tap this, which because I do that, I get to do this. And, blah, 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 blah. And just having a... Well, I'm going to tap this so you can't target with your stuff anymore.
Yeah, knock so you're getting a Yosei, right? You're tapping down X number of permanents, and those permanents will not untap, until two turns from now. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how much you pay, including if you play zero for X... What you're spending is two mana for flash tap creatures you control have hexproof.
Right.
Mike, you can counterspell somebody's effect that is targeting a tap creature you control at flash speed.
Yep.
It now has hexproof. Their spell fails.
The X is fine. That's upside to me. Cool. Sounds great. The blue flash tapped creatures have hexproof. That's so good.
X spell effects where you can pay zero and still be happy. Good, like those are some of the strongest ones.
Yeah, if I can run I can run this in a bunch of decks.
And you can use it as a mana sink if you want.
And ignore the X unless nothing else I got better to do. Like, with it.
Well,
here we go.
I got a bunch of mana. I might as well lock somebody out for two turns.
That's so cool. I love Lost in the Maze. That's great.
And we got kind of a hedge maze thing going.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Well, Mike, cool. We had a big power jump from white to blue.
We did.
Let's see what happens when we move from blue to black.
What you got for me?
We're going to start with Cerebral Confiscation, which is two and a black. And this is a common. This is a sorcery for three mana. Choose one. Target opponent discards two cards, or target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. So you can do a Thoughtseize, or you can just have them discard two of their choice. You know, it's not especially flashy, but this is a kind of modal hand attack that we really haven't seen before. And it's a common, so this will always be cheap.
I mean, it's sorcery speed. If you take that out of it, this is a beater for me. So the fact that like it's at sorcery speed, it makes it nice. Yeah, it's reasonable. Hey, three mana, discard two cards, or opponent tutored for something. Cool.
Excise something out of their hand.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's pretty solid. We've got our next one here. Deadly Cover Up. Scary. Three, black for a sorcery. Here you go, Alex. We're going to have another thing for you to go through. As an additional cost to cast this spell, you may collect evidence 6.
What does that mean, Mike? Well, collect evidence is a new mechanic, which is quite similar to escape, you might remember from a previous set. Collect evidence number means exile cards with the total combined mana value of that number or greater out of your graveyard to pay for that. So we see collect evidence 6. That means you will exile a combined total mana value 6, or CMC, if you remember that, out of your graveyard to get that effect. And please go on, Mike.
So after you do all that, destroy all creatures. If evidence was collected, exile a card from an opponent's graveyard. Then search its owner's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with that name and exile them. That player shuffles, then draws a card for each card exiled from their hand this way.
All right, Mike, we need to have a serious conversation about this. I need you to read this card very carefully with the eye... Maybe not of a killer, but of the kind of person who is a killer in the game of EDH. And tell me what's wrong with this card.
Destroy all creatures. Got it. If evidence was collected, which we're going to assume, exile a card from an opponent's graveyard. Okay. Then search its owner's graveyard, hand, and library for any numbers of cards with the same name and exile them.
Stop.
What did you just read? I didn't read non-land at any point through there.
You sure didn't, Mike. And you also didn't
read non-land. What is this card?
So if you were so inclined, you monster, you could hit somebody's forest out of their graveyard and then exile all forests out of their
graveyard. What is this card?
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? That's so mean. You are.
I am peeking my mic.
That is
ridiculous.
Search its owner's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with that name and exile.
Oh my gosh. Mono.
Their graveyard, their hand,
and
their
library. Mono whatever card done.
If this is a mono-colored player, they are over. They have no mono lands. They have no basic forests, no basic plains. Whatever they're running, they just lost, Mike. Now, you can play this any other way, right? And, you know, in EDH, if you choose a normal card name, you're probably only going to hit one because most EDH cards you can only have as a one of. And there are some, I forget what they actually call them, but cards that you're allowed to run multiples of.
Your rats, like your practitioners, right? Et cetera.
Right, exactly. This could really hose one of those. Sure, those decks exist. But
yeah.
For me, I read this, I'm like, oh my god, you could hit somebody's land, their basic land, and just ruin their
deck. Tell me how you make a card like this, and that's not what you've got in mind. You know what I mean? Like, this is going for those basics.
It would have been so easy for them to say non-basic. Oh my gosh, that's
nuts.
So if when you're reading this card, think of Collect Evidence as a kicker in this case, right? You're paying the three double black, that's five. If you want something on top of the board wipe, right? Because you're getting the board wipe, that's happening. But if you want more, you're going to have to pay the Collect Evidence six. You're kicking it by exiling the six combined total mana value out of your graveyard. And if you do, and somebody has a basic in their graveyard, God.
Okay. Well, I guess moving on. What do you got for me that hopefully isn't as like,
Well, Mike, I have another common. I'm just the common guy today. We have Extract a Confession, which is one in a black, two mana for a sorcery. As an additional cost to cast the spell.
I'm having flashbacks. Six. I don't like
it. As a reminder, you will exile cards with total combined mana value six or greater from your graveyard. Each opponent sacrifices a creature. And if you did this kicker effect, if evidence was collected, instead, each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power among creatures they control.
Yeah. So
you do not kick it, and you only will choose a creature to sacrifice. They'll probably do a token. They'll probably do something that does not matter. However, if you kick it, they're going to have to sacrifice their biggest thing.
This is a fun minigame. Because sometimes I want to get rid of the biggest thing at the table, but I'd rather get rid of this person's super obnoxious engine, but maybe they've got something bigger than that. Or that's pretty neat.
Now, black decks do typically want access to their graveyard, but that also means that they are typically going to be filling their graveyard.
Right.
And thereby, maybe hitting Collect Evidence 6 won't be so bad, but you also don't have to, right? You can just cast this for its normal 2 cost and get this edict effect. Each opponent sacrifices a creature. And Mike, as you know, certain kinds of decks, that really hurts them. Decks like Voltron. That's a really difficult archetype to have an edict result against you.
I dig both of these evidence cards so far because they have been built in a way where without doing the evidence effect, it's still a reasonable card to run.
It's still okay.
Yeah. I don't love the effect of one of these cards if you pay the evidence.
Okay, well, one of them's a rare and one of them's a common.
So and here's the thing. I like the common. I like the common one.
Yeah, I mean, we don't discriminate here. If there's a common that shows up and it's got a cool effect, it's in our wheelhouse with the politics, we're going to talk about it.
You can say we don't discriminate here. I discriminate. If you are the person that casts Deadly Cover-Up and you're excited to get rid of all of somebody's basics, rude.
The moment that somebody resolves Deadly Cover-Up, you need to be looking in your graveyard and making sure you don't have any basics, because if you do, you need to exile your own graveyard in response, to have a big problem.
Yeah, do me a favor. Everybody out there, if you do resolve this card in the terrible way, come into our Discord. We'll have a link in the show notes. Explain yourself, and we'll have counseling available. We'll get you the help that you need, and it's okay. The first step is admitting that you have...
a free cruise.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, because...
I tell them about the free boat ride.
Our next one is the foreboding steamboat.
This is a great cruise. Everybody comes back alive.
No, they come back something. Three black for a 5-7 artifact vehicle. When foreboding steamboat enters the battlefield, each player chooses two non-token, non-vehicle creatures they control. Exile them until foreboding steamboat Mike, leaves the battlefield.
Six things in a normal pod.
You're hitting eight. Each player.
Yeah, each player. Yeah, six opponents' things, including two of yours.
Yeah. Holy cow. Whenever foreboding steamboat attacks, put a card exiled with it into its owner's graveyard. If you do, investigate. And it's got crew two. Like, yeah, it's not two, a
that's,
big...
That's cheap.
That's a 5-7. You're crewing for two. Oh, by the way, when it got in here, it got rid of eight items.
Now, as a reminder, it may have been a while since you've used vehicles, if you ever have. Vehicles are not creatures under normal circumstances, even though they have a power and toughness. To animate them into creatures, you can use their crew ability, which has an activated ability. You will tap a number of creatures with total combined power equal to that value or more, in this case two, which is very affordable.
Five mana, exile eight things until this goes away. And even then, it's, all right, great, now we're going to take those things and we're going to start dumping them into the yard. That's a powerful boat.
It's hitting a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How much are you right now?
That's about 30. $1, my account.
Yeah, I like it. Oh, no, I have to get rid of my own things. Give it
all right, to let's me. Talk about Hunted Bone Brute, which is two and a black, three mana for a creature skeleton beast. It's a 6/2 with menace for three mana. Menace means that it can only be blocked by two or more creatures. Wow, that's dirty. When Hunted Bone Brute enters the battlefield, target opponent creates 2/1/1 white dog creature tokens. Mike, this is a hunted card.
It is.
Hunted cards are part of a super cycle that give you incredible value on the body for the downside of you giving opponents some tokens. But we're not done yet. When a Hunted Bone Brute dies, each opponent loses three life, and it has disguise for one and a black, which means you can cast this face down for three, and you can turn it up face up at any time you have priority for one and a black. Wow. Mike, I love hunted cards, not because of the body, but because I get to give my opponents tokens.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is a 6/2 with menace.
It's a 6/2 with menace. That is a ton of value. Also, it has a death rattle.
Yep. Oh, I'm recurring this thing. Somebody's going to have a lot of dogs.
Target opponent makes 2/1/1 white dog creature tokens. Yeah. Wow.
I don't have a lot to say about it. It's just a cool card. Like, great. Three mana. Make a scary beast. I was actually upset when I first read it. I'm like, oh, it's a skeleton doggo, but it's not. It's just got doggos attacking it. That's cool. I like it. Our last one here in black, the Polygraph Orb, 4 and a black for an artifact. When Polygraph Orb enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library, put 2 of them in your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose 2 life. Then you can pay 2 and tap it to collect evidence 3. Each opponent loses 3 life unless they discard a card or sacrifice a creature. That's good.
Now, let's be clear. The 2 tap and collect evidence 3, those are all costs to activate the ability.
Yes, to do the thing. Yes.
Yes. You'll pay 2 generic, pay 2 mana, you'll tap it, and you'll exile at least 3 mana value combined cards out of your graveyard. Each opponent loses 3 life unless they discard a card or sacrifice a creature. That's an instance of Torment of Hellfire, Mike.
Mm-hmm. That's some solid stuff.
Yeah, we got a good ETB. We got a good ability.
Mm-hmm.
It is an uncommon, so the value may not be where everyone might want it, but it has the stuff we like on here. It's going to force our opponents to make a choice. We can repeat that effect, and we're actually feeding our own graveyard with that ETB effect, so we're more likely to be able to collect that evidence.
Well, I mean, heck, if 5 mana for look at the top 4, draw 2, lose 2,
mill and tomb two.
And tomb two. That's not like an amazing value, but it's not a bad one.
I mean, you're in black. You might be perfectly happy to start putting
stuff on the side of your library. If I said pay 5 mana, draw 4 cards, lose two life, you'd be fine with that.
Yeah, effectively. That's what you're doing. Your second hand in your black.
So, yeah. Putting this isn't
uncommon, Mike. So this is extraordinarily affordable. It's under 20 cents. And I don't know. I think that's a really cool one.
I think it's a good value.
Why don't we just take a minute? We did our first three colors. Let's take a brief break.
Okay.
What are we thinking about white, black, and blue so far? We're seeing a lot of interesting and powerful things, Mike.
My favorite card is still the first one that I wrote down.
Which blue is... We
can't talk about that yet. That's a spoiler for later. Is it Lost in the Maze? No. It Lost in the Maze is the finalist, but it's not the winner.
Is it the Coveted Falcon?
No, F that card. I'm very mad at that bird. There's so many words. It's a very cool card. It's just a lot of words and a lot going on, which makes me turn off just a little bit on my brain.
Right, but let's have a brief break. When we come back, we're going to do red and green.
Yes.
And then next episode, we're going to do our commanders, our multicolors, and our colorless cards, if you're waiting for those.
Be right back. Okay, Alex.
Well, Mike, I've been collecting some evidence, and I'm not sure you're going to like what I found.
Oh, no.
I've discovered...
Am I guilty?
That you enjoy the game of Commander.
I do. I admit it.
We're going to have to do some further investigations.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
let's move on into red and see if we discover anything else about your guilt.
All right. Yes, I am guilty, but is loving Commander a crime? Only if you steal... other people's permanence and stuff, or murder, or... Wow, there's a lot of crimes in EDH. Anyway, why don't we get started with red? Tell me about our first card here, Alex.
Sure, Mike. We got Andrag's Rampage. That's 3 red, 5 mana for a sorcery.
Okay.
Destroy all artifacts you don't control, then exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of artifacts that were put into graveyards from the battlefield this turn. You may put a creature card exiled this way onto the battlefield.
Ooh.
It gains haste. Return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step.
Okay.
You've got a lot going on here.
Yeah.
The direct comparison I would make is to Vandal Blast.
Sure.
Which is also sorcery speed. It's 1 mana cheaper for the overload version, which we get here. And it's also modular. However, we do have a very new effect here. Exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of artifacts that were put into graveyard in the battlefield this turn. So from this effect, or from any previous spot removal or board wipe this turn, however many you hit, you're going to get to dig that deep. And if you find a creature, you're going to put it right onto the battlefield. And unlike most red threaten effects that kind of grab something and sneak attack, right? Instead of being exiled, they're going to the graveyard, it bounces to hand.
Yeah.
Which means you can play it back out.
So if it... Okay. Number of artifacts that were put into graveyards. So I blow up 38 treasure tokens.
Oh my god.
I'm exiling the top 38.
Yes, you are.
Oofa doofa. I like the double-edged sword of this. It's, hey, 5 mana. We got another Vandal Blast, but...
Yeah,
it's
we're not...
better, unless it's worse.
When you dig, when you finish digging, you're not... putting those cards back on the bottom of your library.
Nope, you're exiling.
Yeah.
Gone, baby, gone.
So you need to seriously consider if you're going to hit a fat board wipe with this, if you're ready to exile that many cards.
Yeah.
Although, that's just increasing your chances you're going to hit something really juicy.
Exactly. Like, it's a pretty interesting, like, overall, You know, it would suck to lose, like, 30 cards off the top of my library, but it gives me a good chance to get an Atali trigger that I wasn't expecting this turn, and then attack and then get some extra spells, and then put Atali back. Ah! It's pretty neat. I like it's a cool little board wipe here.
Yeah, it's definitely got some nice value on it, and it's a story spotlight, although I could not possibly tell you what's happening. It looks like, goodness, is that a star-nosed mole?
Possibly. I know that moles are prominent in this set. I was gonna say prominent in this set as opposed to other sets. Moles have appeared in this set. And by the way, to help you out, so what's happening in this card is Andrag is having a rampage.
Oh,
yeah. Anyway, next card, Bolt Bender, 3 and a red for a 4/2 Goblin Wizard with disguise, 1 and a red. When Boltbender is turned face up, you may choose new targets for any number of spells and or abilities.
Wow.
Woo!
So this is a color-shifted version of Willbender, which is famously, to my knowledge, prior to this set, just about the only card that is able to truly deal with any kind of suppression and get through to be an effective kind of counter magic, right? There's no amount of can't be countered. There's no amount of split second that can prevent this kind of thing from happening, turning a morph card face up, or in this case, a disguise card. But unlike Willbender, where you're getting a single such effect, when Boltbender is turned face up, you may choose new targets for any number of other spells and or abilities.
Yeah.
So if you have a big
at the stack
where you got some counter magic wards,
yeah,
or maybe you have somebody getting a little bit too aggressive with a bunch of effects that they want to maintain priority on, there are counter spells that Counterflux, I believe, is one of them, that allow you to hit every spell on the stack. But again, this has that unique way of skirting things that would normally prevent you from interacting with the stack. Things like the spell can't be countered, things like split second. This just doesn't care about those, Mike.
No, this is a very cool card. This is another one of those, why is this less expensive than it should be in my head? Because worst case scenario, you turn it over and, oh, nope, that's not doing that. It's doing this now. Best case scenario, okay, cool. So the stack's got a lot of stuff on it. I would like to redo all of that. And just, let's do this instead. Which, man, means that you're going to have to keep a lot more, or you're going to have to pay a lot more attention to things and how they're literally stacking on the stack. But it's still very cool. I like
it. Unlike a lot of these disguise cards where the cost is significantly more to cast it with disguise, because you're paying three than you're paying disguise cost, this is only one additional generic to cast it disguised and then pay for it as compared to hard casting it.
Right.
Which, and I would not recommend.
There would be no reason to do ever. It's the only reason that you could even.
This does have relevant creature types for Goblin and Wizard.
I guess. That's about it. But even then, no. If this is ever casted face up, it's because something has gone wrong. Pretty much
every disguise card that we've seen, it's technically modal. It's not. The other mode is usually vanilla.
Yep.
So we got some great value on there. And that's, again, nobody will ever expect that.
For sure.
When somebody comes in and does whatever, they have their knowledge pool lock, whatever kind of specialty they have that says nobody can do anything.
Right.
When you have the Boltbender or the Willbender, you say, there is one exception.
Well, even if you just go, okay, cool. I'm going to path your commander. No, you're going to path this instead. I reveal my Boltbender. Wajah. That's pretty solid. What do you got for our next card here?
Mike, I have what may very well be the best card in the set.
Oh, boy.
Expedited Inheritance, which is red. That's two mana for an enchantment. Whenever creatures dealt damage, its controller may exile that many cards from the top of their library. They may play those cards until the end of their next turn. Oh, my God.
That's chaos.
So, whenever creatures dealt damage from any source, combat, non-combat, burn, ping, what have you, its controller can impulse draw that many cards, the number of cards equal to the amount of damage dealt to a creature they control. Mike, does red have effects that deal damage to a lot of creatures? Maybe like a blasphemous act?
It's not even non-combat damage. It's like any instance of damage.
Yeah, combat damage counts too.
Ooh, Boise.
And that is so great. Like, this is the group hug discount right here, Mike. Two mana for this?
That's
oh my God.
That makes combat
so interesting.
So tricky.
You are, like, people are going to be drawing so many cards. Now, here's the other thing about it. This is not card draw.
No.
So if you were to run an effect that said players can't draw cards or can't draw more than one card, you can basically say, we're playing my game now. You can't draw normally, but if you want to get those cards, you better start dealing some damage to creatures.
Just going to start putting this in token decks and stuff.
Oh, my God, Mike. Yeah. This, I mean, it's a mythic.
Oh, I'm going to chump block with my 1-1. You're going to hit it with your 5-5. Oh, okay, cool. I'm going to exile the top five.
Even as a mythic,
yeah.
This is aggressively costed. And it's the group hug, right? It's because it's a symmetric effect that can benefit your opponents. And because of that, they said, hey, you get this for 2 mana. Mike, oh my goodness. This card is so, so effective. I haven't even played it yet, and I can already tell.
Woof. Fair enough.
This is explosive.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing. This card will win somebody the game. I don't know who.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah. Big fan.
It's not king making if I don't know who's winning.
Exactly. Hot Pursuit. 1 and a red for an enchantment is our next card. When Hot Pursuit enters the battlefield, suspect target creature an opponent controls.
Okay.
As long as Hot Pursuit remains on the battlefield, that creature is also goaded. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if two or more players have lost the game, gain control of all goaded and or all suspected creatures until end of turn. Untap them. They gain haste until end of turn. That is kind of nuts.
Yeah, that's an interesting one there. Before we go into the finer details of that,
yes, please.
This is the first time we've seen suspect, and that is another novel keyword from this set. What does suspect mean? Well, a suspected creature is a status that a creature can have, and it lasts indefinitely. And when a creature is suspected, it has menace, which it's great. Can't be blocked except by two more creatures.
Big fan.
But also it can't block.
Also good.
So when it becomes a suspect, it becomes an aggressive suspect.
Yep. Holy cow. Okay, so another card. Very cool. I like it. I don't like not having the reminder text on it when it's first time it's been in this set, but that's fine.
Well,
it's
Mike, fine. There's already 15,000 words on this card.
That's meaning that it's doing too much.
They had to reduce the font size because there's too much on the
card. This card has reminder text necessary for it, and it's still reduced. Man, there's a lot of cards.
So let's hit this again.
Right? Yes, please.
It's a 2-mana enchantment. It ETBs. You're going to suspect a creature an opponent controls. What does that mean?
That means that it
means it is menace.
And so it can't block.
If you want to block it, it has to be blocked by 2, 3, 4+ creatures.
Yep.
Can't block, so it cannot be declared as a blocker. Also, for this specific card, it's goaded.
Separately, so
it has to attack,
yes.
It has to attack another player of Fable.
Yep.
Juicy stuff there. And then, additionally, at the beginning of combat on your turn, if two or more players have lost the game, which means, basically, in most games, that would mean your head's up. It's the end game. Gain control of all goaded and or suspected creatures until end of turn. Untap them, and they gain haste. Mike, what is the one downside of goad decks? Heads up.
The one-on-one sucks.
It sucks because all those creatures, effectively,
they can attack you now. The upside of goaded
is gone. They still have to attack, but now they're all going to attack you.
Unless.
But this says when you go heads up, or in this case, maybe you're in a pot of more than four, so as long as two people have lost, now all of the goaded and suspected creatures are yours until end of turn. Every combat that will happen. That's not going to happen very often. It is an interesting kind of little bonus.
So here's the thing. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if it's you and one other person in a standard pot,
basically,
you gain control of all goaded and suspected creatures until end of turn. You untap them.
Cool. Yeah.
So if you have repeat goad effects, and that creature, and the creature that you suspected originally stays suspected. This just turns into, okay, great. Here's my goad deck. I go that. Cool. All right, my turn. Combat. I'm going to take all those things again. This is a cool.
There's that mono red commander that gives other players survivors, and then just yoinks the leash, brings them all back.
Yep. Karazakar cares about goading things and getting value out of goading things. Like, there's a decent amount of stuff. This is a cool card. I am excited for a red enchantment that's like, hey, You want to goad stuff and see cool things that when you goad stuff, here you go. I like that.
I think that if your deck is a red goad deck, that this is a very, very good include, because in that situation, when you get to the end game, that turns goad into just an even better mechanic.
Yeah, for sure.
It removes the downside.
No, I like it. But it's not Battle Cruisery enough for me. Like, it's good. But
well, what if we had, like, a dragon or something?
Yeah! Incinerator of the Guilty. 4 red for a creature dragon. 6/6 flying trample. That's what we're talking about. but don't worry. Like everything else in this set, there's lots of extra words.
We're not done yet.
When Incinerator of the Guilty deals combat damage to a player, you may collect evidence X. When you do, Incinerator of the Guilty deals X damage to each creature and planeswalker that player controls. So, I do damage to somebody with this thing. I get rid of mana value X from my graveyard.
Yes.
I deal that much damage to every creature and planeswalker they control. And, oh, by the way, it's a dragon with flying and trample. So it's going to get through.
Yeah, this is giving me... That's going to be Hellkite time, yeah. Right? You just get this enormous benefit when you hit somebody. And it is it's a flample dragon. It's probably going to hit somebody. Right.
Wow.
And you can just burn them out. Just absolutely decimate their board.
Wow.
That's a big old beater effect. It's very
that
timid.
Is.
You're going to swing in with a huge dragon. You're going to just incinerate their entire board. However much you want to. You want to hit it all. You want to hit it a little bit. You just want to get your damage triggers off. Or you want to blow it all up. It's, that's a dragon for you right there.
It's very good. I like it. You know what? Too powerful. Too strong. Mm. Too scary.
Okay.
Give me something different.
How about Krenko's Buzz Crusher? That's 2 red, 4 mana for an artifact creature Insectopter. It's a 4/4 flying trample. For 4.
Okay.
When Krenko's Buzz Crusher enters the battlefield, for each player, destroy up to 1 non-basic land that player controls. Ooh. For each land destroyed this way, its controller may search their library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle.
Okay.
This is, we got a little bit of, what's our land destruction lands? Got there's at least 4 or 5 of them at this point.
I don't run any of them because I'm a bad Magic player slash
Tectonic
friendly person.
Edge, something like that.
Sure.
And then we're doing a little bit of maybe some Terastodon style action.
Anyway, we're
blowing up non-basics and we're replacing them with basics.
Hey, that's a cool not fair land that you have. Let's replace it with something
also,
fair. Here you
I
go.
I mean, if you care about bodies. It's a 4/4 flample.
Yeah, for 4.
And it's an artifact creature, too.
And again, for each player, destroy up 2. So, I like my lands. I'm cool. We're going to be fine. That's nice. It's a good replacement for, oh no, somebody's got a terrible, terrible land. Hey, Gaia's Cradle is too expensive. It should not be in this deck. I'm sorry. This table can't handle it. Have a forest. Okay. That's a cool card. I like that effect.
Definitely.
Mob Verdict. 2 red for a sorcery with Secret Council.
Secret Council. We did it.
Each player secretly votes for another player. Then those players are revealed. For each vote an opponent received, Mob Verdict deals 2 damage to that player and each creature that player controls. For each vote you received, draw a card. Mm. This is the right kind of fun. I'm going to put people in a position where they can mess with each other or help me. Huzzah.
Most of the time, they're probably not going to help you, but that's the
fun.
Interesting
I'll
thing.
Help, I'll help me.
If they don't want to hurt somebody, they have to help you. And if they don't want to help you, they have to hurt someone.
Yep. I like the ones where it's like, man, who do I don't want to hit them because they don't, I don't want to hit Todd, because Todd doesn't have any creatures, so I'm not getting a lot of value out of it. So I'll hit Jenny. And then Jenny says, well, I don't want to get hit. So I don't get a whole lot of value off of this. I'll do 2 damage to Todd.
I think for the most part, this voting for you is almost like the optional cantrip, right? You can cantrip if you want to, or you can stack another two damage onto all their stuff.
Right. Here's the thing. If somebody is distinctly the arch enemy with a whole lot of stuff, all right, cool. I'm going to vote for myself and assume that the other people
everyone
are
else,
vote for them.
You take care of business for me.
Hey, Secret take Console, care of this for me, please.
Got to be one of the best ability words of all time. We love it so much.
Big fan, big fan, big Mike, fan, big fan.
This is perhaps the most flavorful card in the set.
Okay.
Prisoner's Dilemma.
All right.
Three red, red, that's five mana for a sorcery. Each opponent secretly chooses Silence or Snitch. Then those choices are revealed. If each opponent chose Silence, Prisoner's Dilemma deals four damage to each of them. If each opponent chose Snitch, Prisoner's Dilemma deals eight damage to each of them. Otherwise, Prisoner's Dilemma deals 12 damage to each opponent who chose Silence. And it has flashback for five red, red, seven mana flashback.
It's trust or betray as the actual like game show mechanic,
it's,
except
it's
for now
literally
it's
literally the Prisoner's Dilemma. For anyone who's not familiar, it's
so good.
A classic game theory equilibrium style problem where there are two options and there's hidden information for each of the two parties. Now, theoretically, the best outcome would be if everybody voted for Silence. That is going to give the minimum amount of damage to everyone. However, if you vote for Silence, that opens you up to be stabbed in the back and get the worst outcome of 12 damage. So the most common equilibrium that you're going to find is that everybody does Snitch. So you're going to get the middle ground for everybody. Nobody gets hit too hard. Nobody gets off too easy. However, Mike, as a game theory card, there's no true rational optimal action, right? There's people's motives are different. People's interests are different. How this is going to play out is going to be different every single time. I do wish this were a little bit more impactful, but as for flavor, it's a 10 out of 10.
You're saying a little bit more impactful. I think this is a five mana spell that's going to deal on average, like it's going to deal like 12 damage at the table pretty easy each cast.
It really does need a flashback, right? And
yeah,
you
and it, which it's got.
You
like,
want to have a deck that already cares about people taking damage, losing life, or have a means to double or triple multiply the amount of damage people are taking, or in some way derive benefit from it.
I personally
think that if on average you're dealing eight damage to each player with the spell and you're not getting anything out of that, that's just not enough, right? You would need some kind of side benefit to that.
So each opponent.
Yes.
So that's where I'm okay with this card, because the idea of...
They have to play.
Worst,
you're the warden.
Worst case scenario, if each of them takes four damage and I paid five mana for that, that's a decent return on investment. The idea that I've got it in my back pocket in the graveyard for later, also pretty ideal to me. Especially when you start getting to lower life totals and people have to be a lot more selfish about that.
That's true. Once the life totals start mattering, it's a different story, right? But if anybody has any kind of normal life total, then the dynamics may not be as interesting as you might want. You may have to do something to make this.
I have a counter.
Okay.
I have a counter.
Okay.
If everybody's basically in the like high 30s or 40s,
yeah, so they
or
don't
whatever,
care.
Right? So we're still here, okay? If you do this and everybody picks Silence, it's still four damage across the board to everybody. It's still 12 damage for a five mana spell. Mm-hmm. That's your worst case scenario. Your best case scenario is that, oh, I'm going to deal four damage, and two opponents just say, okay, cool, we'll just take Silence, it's still in the early game. And one of your opponents doesn't. And at that point, it's, oh, well, hey, what the hell? You know, and getting upset. And that means that you cast this spell, and they get to be mad at somebody else for the result. Anytime I'm the responsible party for causing some chaos, but I am not the person to be blamed, even though it's 100% my fault, I'm all for it. The idea of, wait, why'd you do that?
The most interesting
take 12
part
damage
about
now.
That, kind of the extension of that would be that how that plays out will necessarily influence other parts of the game, but a special influence if you resolve it again with flashback.
Yep.
How they're going to act the next time they see it. And the next
this
time.
This is why I dig the. And this is why
I did. I didn't say it. I said it's a 10 out of 10 flavor card.
Yep. I think this card is more good than you think it is, but I think we both think that it is. It's at least got places, which I'm okay with. I'm totally fine with that. Let's move on to something terrifying. Vengeful Tracker. One in a red for a 2/2 human detective. Whenever an opponent sacrifices an artifact, Vengeful Tracker deals 2 damage to them. Treasure. I get this being in the deck where it's like, aha, clues. We have to destroy clues. Oh, this is someone who's going to get mad at you for destroying evidence and clues and blah, 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 blah. Treasure, bad.
Treasure. Yeah, treasure is definitely at the point where it is now one of the more popular and dominant archetypes.
Powerful.
It's very effective. Having means to access mana that are disposable, that are rarely interacted with. That are
things with not, token doubling, I mean, they're
unsavory targets for removal because you can just use them immediately. Having something like this can really make somebody have to consider. I mean, to me, this is a silver bullet, right? Specifically against treasure. Now, it does apply to just incidental clue, blood token. Somebody happens to sacrifice maybe like a locket, mana rock. It'll hit some things just randomly, but. To me, this is existing against treasure.
Yeah. I mean, almost entirely. If it hits something else, cool. But this is you're going to make a billion D of those.
You're going to crack all your treasures today, huh?
You're going to suffer for it.
Well, you better win before my trigger resolves.
It's pretty good. I like Vengeful Tracker. We're going to move on to green here. And before we do, I'm going to give you the option. Because I think... there is a very cool flavor card, and then there's a very cool, ooh, this exists. So I want to know which one you want to take. Which one do you want to talk about first?
I want the card with the keyword that makes us happy, and that's not the first one.
Okay, then that's fine, because the first one is the one that I want to talk about.
Okay.
So Prisoner's Dilemma is a very cool flavor card. It is. A Killer Among Us is a very cool flavor card. This is a good set. Four and a green for an enchantment. When a Killer Among Us enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 white human creature token, a 1/1 blue merfolk creature token, and a 1/1 red goblin creature token. Then secretly choose human, merfolk, or goblin. Then you have the second paragraph of text here. Sacrifice a Killer Among Us. Reveal the chosen creature type. If target attacking creature token is the chosen type, put 3+1/+1 counters on it, and it gains death touch until end of turn. This is fun.
Yeah. When I first saw this, I didn't really understand what was supposed to be, what the primary benefit you derive from it is. And the idea, to my understanding now, is that you would attack with all three, they're forced to make reasonable blocks on all three, and any one of those three could end up being the Death Toucher, and then lose that creature. It's a very flavorful idea. To me, this is nowhere near effective enough at doing this kind of thing. I would want a lot more out of this. And it isn't uncommon. You are getting three tokens.
Where I look at this card is the ones where it cares about when a creature you control attacks or when a creature you control deals combat damage. Mm-hmm. Because there is this rattlesnake of, well, I could block a 1/1, but what if a 1/1 becomes a 4/4? You can
combat trick into this.
Yeah, and it's kind of... Here's the other part. It's 5 mana, it's making me 3 tokens, and then potentially making one of those tokens scary. I'm kind of okay with that, you know? Make 2 1/1s and a 4/4. It's not great value for 5 mana, but it's not terrible. But it's a fun combat trick to play into.
Now, since this is not really... I mean, it is a linked ability.
Yeah.
But because those creature types, human, merfolk, and goblin, because those are normal types, it says reveal the chosen creature type if target attacking creature token is the chosen type. Mm-hmm. That means that if you have any other
changelings
kind of target attacker creature token that is any of those, exactly, changelings or any of those type, including from another player.
Yep.
So you could certainly do some tricky stuff with this. As it stands, I almost wish that the rarity were higher so it could be a little bit spicier, maybe add just something a little extra.
Sure.
But flavorfully, it's great.
It's very cool. I do like it as a an idea. You're right. As far as we look at
the
art,
the human, the goblin, and the merfolk are arguing over a dead body in the woods.
Very much. Who did it? Well, we're gonna find out when they all attack.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, they're covered in water.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the merfolk.
Fair enough. Yeah. Give me your next one. And you can choose whether it's the card that you wanted to specifically talk about or just the other one.
I'll just do these next two and then you can do the last one.
Sounds good, because I like the last one too.
So we have another card in a super cycle that we never really expected we would see the next version of.
Here we start.
We saw Archmage's Charm
mm-hmm.
a few years back, triple blue. It's Archdruid's Charm, triple green, 3 mana for an instant. Choose one, first option. Search your library for a creature or land card and reveal it. Put it onto the battlefield tapped if it's a land card. Otherwise, put it into your hand and shuffle.
That seems good.
Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. It deals damage equal to its power to target creature you don't control. That is
Punch.
One half of fight.
Yep.
And
that is protective fight.
Option three, the reason that I've included it, exile target artifact or enchantment.
Oofa doofa.
Now, modal cards have... Their math is a little bit different than non-modal cards, right? Three mm-hmm. mana for exile, target, artifact, or enchantment. Way too expensive. 3 mana for get a land card out of the battlefield. Too expensive. But this is giving you these options, right? You can tutor a creature mm-hmm. or a land, which broadly quite useful. And if it's a land, it goes straight to the battlefield.
Oh, for sure.
You have this green soft removal that green likes to do, where it'll do a fight. But this is even better than fight. Because it does not cause your mm-hmm. creature to take damage.
It does not hit back.
And then you have the very green removal, artifacts and enchantments, unnatural permanents that green likes to remove. And that's an exile effect.
Right? With an exile.
So,
yeah.
Like most modal effects,
targeted removal or
too expensive for each individual effect. That's just how it works. But these three options, mm-hmm. we've got some great choices here. Mike, what do you like out of here?
So, again, it's targeted removal for three. That's a lot of different things. You know, it depending on how
it could be a creature or an artifact or an enchantment or
exactly, or tutoring a creature or a land. And if it's a land,
having a tutor out here is very attractive.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. Like this is
that's what you want a card to be broadly useful when it's modal. You want it to be able to fulfill a lot of different scenarios and be good in any of them.
I don't know many decks with green in it that this wouldn't be mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it is green, green, green. So, yeah, when you get into more and more and more and more colors, it's going to be a little bit harder to cast. But as far as, like, overall effect and ability, this is a really good card.
Create and organize my decks, and I imagine some other people do this too, and putting them into a spreadsheet and putting them into categories. Having mm-hmm. cards that fit into multiple categories that are doing multiple distinct things, not necessarily modal, in this case it is, that's very good for your deck because that means that when I add this card, I've added both a ramp and a tutor and a spot removal by adding one card. Mm-hmm. So if your deck likes all of those things,
which it should,
you can now use this to... Maybe if you need to cut another card that doesn't do as many things, maybe you find yourself that you need to leave these options open. Modal cards, you don't see them as often as I think as you might otherwise, just because of that that cost kind of gives people sticker shock, right? Like, oh, I can exile something for cheaper than that. I can ramp for cheaper than that. It's just the math is different, Mike. You know that.
Yeah, for sure. Overall, very cool card. It's the cost of doing business.
That's a modal spell for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so now we've seen green and blue of this. Maybe in future years we'll see white, red, and black Mage Charm.
I'm excited to see what those would do. Because everything's been pretty on theme, but with like a little bit of an extra. Oh, I wouldn't have expected that. So
do we want to briefly go back to the blue charm?
I mean, we can.
Now, the blue one, that came out in Modern Horizons 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that's triple blue for an instant. First option, counter target spell. Second option, target player draws two cards. Third option, gain control of target non-land permanent mana value one or less.
Right.
Yeah.
Give me that now, ring.
Not this is juicy, right? Yeah. But again, the same thing with the green one. Counter target spell, this is more mana than a counter spell. Counter spells are two. Target player draws two cards. In blue, you'd expect to pay two for that. And gain control of target non-land permanent CMC one or less. You'd expect to pay two or maybe even one.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing is that you have these options. So I'm excited to see the rest of the cards in that super cycle. Now, unfortunately, with how far apart these were, it might be many years
before we see more. Yeah. But you never know. Fingers crossed.
But on the upside, I have a card here with one of our favorite ability words on it.
Mm-hmm.
Innocuous Researcher.
Yeah.
Just three and a green. It's a creature centaur detective. It's a 3/4, and it has parlay. We love parlay. Whenever Innocuous Researcher attacks, each player reveals the top card of their library. For each non-land card revealed this way, you investigate. Then each player draws a card.
Yep.
Now, that's the kind of parlay we like because that's repeatable.
Yeah.
Some of the other parlay cards, and honestly, it's still representing a significant minority, are one-offs that don't even really do that much. We like repeatable parlay. Yep. And we're not done yet, though. At the beginning of your end step, you may untap all lands you control.
Ooh.
If you do, you can't cast spells into your next turn.
Boo.
Hey. There are other things you can do with that mana.
I know.
You can activate abilities, mana sinks.
I know. Here's the thing. This card was
That's
completely optional. This card was fighting so hard to go in Silvala. It's like, hey, would you like another parlay card? Come on. It'll be great. Get more investigation, draw cards, yay, all that good stuff. Untap. We love untaps. That's great. Just don't cast spells for a while. That's the whole point!
You don't have to take that part if you don't want. And in fact, if you don't have anything to do with it, you could... I mean, take the untap.
The fact that it's a May is great. It's not a bad card at all. And all of my complaining is just that this card isn't busted, which is okay, because I don't need any more busted cards for that specific effect. It's a very cool card. I like it
a lot. Innocuous Researcher looks a little bit like Prince if he were a centaur. Yep.
I knew for a fact where you were going. Here's the thing. Yeah. For people that aren't looking at this card with us, Alex said, this centaur looks a lot like, and I knew he was going to say Prince before he said anything, which means the card very much looks like Prince.
It does.
Last one, Alex. I really do like this.
We got another moto card, Mike.
Yeah.
And this is a common.
And it's, well, and we just got done all of this, like, oh, well, all these moto cards, they usually have to have like an uptick in the mana cost because they are moto and that you have lots of different options. Well, you can't get much less cost than green.
It doesn't go too much lower than that.
Yeah, one mana for a sorcery. Choose one. Each opponent sacrifices an artifact, or each opponent sacrifices an enchantment, or each opponent sacrifices a creature with flying. That's cool.
Yeah. There's a reason why this is one, even at common... Even at sorcery speed and even modal.
Yeah.
And that's because the opponents are choosing what they're going to sacrifice. And if they have something worthless, like a treasure token, they'll just get rid of that and the spell's a bust for them.
100%. However,
there are definitely scenarios where you are resolving a one mana sorcery and people are losing major pieces on their board.
Creature, like their commander.
They're losing like a seven mana enchantment. These things can happen. As long as you wait patiently with this card. Now, unfortunately, it's not an instant, so there's just going to be times where you really want to cast it, but you can't. Unless you use that card that allows you to flash things in another opponent's end step spot.
Right.
They think they're all safe, maybe not. But you're right. This is so aggressively costed for a modal spell that's also a common.
I'm glad it's at sorcery speed. It's a one mana spell that says all of you blow something up of my choice. Like, and it's like, I understand. We're not choosing what they're blowing up, but you're choosing what kind of thing they're blowing up. And on more times than not, that means, that is the problem. Do you have two of that thing? Cool. Blow it up.
Now, this could feel a little bit, you know, Kopi or Magical Christmas Land, whatever you want to call it. However, there are a significant number of commanders that helm a deck. The commander incidentally has flying, but it's not a flying deck. And what do you know? The only creature they control with flying is their commander, Mike.
Yeah.
And you just paid one mana to have them sack their commander.
Yeah, get that out of here. Sorry. Don't need it to be here anymore. And it's a sacrifice.
It's a sacrifice.
It gets around everything. I don't care about Hexproof. I don't care about Indestructible.
You don't care about Protection.
Yeah, it's gone. You're getting rid of it. Go away. Very good. Cigar to host a Faron is fine, but that's about it. This is very cool. This is very cool list that you've put together so far, Alex. I like these cards.
Yeah, Mike, this is an exciting set, and I should hope so, right? This is the clue set. This is the murder set. This is the set that I would expect to see wheeling and dealing, conniving, cutting deals, cutting people's faces. And lo and behold, we finally saw, I mean, we've seen game theory cards before, right? We saw Wheel of Misfortune. That's very much a game theory card, as is most pile cards. You could call them game theory style cards. But really just putting it on with Prisoner's Dilemma. Yes, I complain that it's not powerful enough, whatever. Flavorfully, I'm so glad to see Prisoner's Dilemma and a lot of other great cards in here. Mike, what is your pick from this, from the monocolor part of this set? What do you like?
We talked about it early. There is no reason for me to think Immortal Obligation is not, like, going to go into a ton of my decks. Just, okay, cool. You've got something that is a problem. I would like to bring it back for you. We're friends now.
Let's real quick read that again.
And make it everybody else's problem. One and a white for an instant. Return target creature card from an opponent's graveyard to the battlefield under their control with a duty counter on it. For as long as that creature has a duty counter on it, it is goated. Can't attack you or a permanent you control and can't block creatures you control. I'm going to make something somebody else's problem. Think about putting this on an Eldrazi.
Think about imprinting this on an Isochron Scepter.
Yeah. Oh, everything comes back. All right, all of you leave me alone.
Bloop, 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 this, bloop, bloop, bloop. This is an intense amount of value. It's very clear why this is too, because it's all benefiting an opponent, but you still get those rider clauses in that contract that very strongly protects you. This is a great pick.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I was searching for something to take the spot out of that. And there's a lot of cool cards in here. Like Trouble in Pairs is a really powerful card in white, especially for us. Lost in the Maze is an awesome card. Coveted Falcon. Like there's a bunch of really good, just like overall, like, oh, these are good cards. The amount of fun I'm going to have with Immortal Obligation is.
Here's my pick, Mike, and
what you got?
And I've picked this. This is 100% going directly into Nidin, the Hug Artist, Expedited Inheritance.
Yep.
Which is double red, two mana for an enchantment. Yep. Whenever a creature is dealt damage, its controller may exile that many cards from the top of their library, and they may play those cards until the end of their next turn. So just in most group hug and politics decks, this is going to do serious work. Mike, in a Pinger deck with red, this is gas. I am already trying to ping people's creatures in Nidin and make them draw cards. This is just, we're wilding with this card.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The cost is hyper aggressive. I never would have imagined this at two mana.
And it's an everybody effect. Other people can take advantage of it, so it's got to be extremely cheap. And what's more,
if you're trying to run a very stacksy style deck and preventing draws and dictating who's allowed to draw,
yeah.
This is fitting right into that strategy because this is not a draw.
It's very good.
Wow.
Alex, we've gone through the monocolored decks set, and a lot of new keyword abilities and effects, and we have Morph, but not Morph, and we have manifest but not manifest, etc.
Mike, there actually is one other keyword that we didn't talk about, and we'll briefly touch it here.
Yeah.
It's the new enchantment type, which is case.
Okay.
Right. We just didn't happen to have any of those. Case looks a little bit like class enchantments, or perhaps sagas a little bit, but they're not quite the same. So just as an example, let's check out this card, the Case of the Crimson Pulse. This is on the release notes. It's 2 red, 3 mana for an enchantment case. When this case enters the battlefield, discard a card and draw 2 cards. And then we have 2 additional abilities here. We have 2 solve and we have solved.
Okay.
So.
Oh, that's cool. It's basically like a mini game, like.
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So to solve means this is going to check at the beginning of your end step. So at the beginning of your end step, if, in this case, you have no cards in hand, you're hellbent, then we're going to solve the case. When we solve the case, we're going to get this trigger. At the beginning of your upkeep, discard your hand, then draw 2 cards. Now, this is pretty straightforward. The only thing you really have to know is when are we checking for the solve? We're checking at the beginning of your end step. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, I had an excellent question in one of the Discord servers. What happens when solved? Do I still get to keep everything besides my solve trigger? The answer is yes, you do, right? We still, okay. Now this card doesn't have anything, but there are some other cases that give you a recurring benefit, and you'll be happy to know that you will continue to get whatever other benefits on the card you may have after the case has been solved. And once it's been solved, it stays solved indefinitely. So that's just not that complicated. But if you have any questions about case or collect evidence or disguise or cloak or any of the other new mechanics, Mike, there's a lot of new mechanics in this set. You can feel free to hit me up on social media. I'm on Twitter at Lappermedic, LAPPERMEDIC. You can access all of my projects at my website, lapper.gay, LAPPER.GAY. And I also have, we have a bunch of Mergers at Karlov Manor infinite combos on my website, commanderspellbook.com, where we're the search engine for infinite combos. And if you heard about some of these cards, you're like, oh my God, that could go infinite. You're probably right. And you can just go straight to our homepage and click the Mergers at Karlov Manor button, and you're going to see all of our clue and murders combos. Now, Mike, we talked many about things. A lot of cards today, but we're not even remotely close to being done, are we?
No. We've got a full another episode, which, based off of the words and everything else that we saw in just the monocolored pieces, is going to be like another 4 or 5 episodes, which is great. It's a cool set.
We do actually have a single monocolored commander that we're going to talk about, because we did get a cycle of cards in the Clue Karlov Manor board game.
Okay.
And those are a cycle of legends, like, you know, Colonel Mustard and Professor Plum. With fun in-universe names instead.
Very cool.
So we do one of those, and then we'll have all our multicolored cards.
All the standards, as far as all of the legends and all of the multicolored cards and everything in between. Looking forward to that. Look for that in the next week. Well, from the time that you're listening to this, it'll be very, very soon, because we want to make sure we hit them close to the same time frame here. Until then, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.